No, no.
overcome the psychological threshold of 10 people attending. Hello, everybody. Today it's a pleasure to welcome Guadalupe, an old friend of Jorge. Guadalupe is a last year PhD student in Leiden, not at LAM, as I wrongly wrote in the announcement. She's the Sitter Fellow of the Leiden Observatory and of the Theoretical Institute of Physics in Leiden, member of the Euclid Consortium, and indeed, the topic of her talk today is about that. I invite people to stop a little bit at every time to ask questions and hopefully show your face with the webcam. It's more nice. Please.
Okay, so well, thank you so much for the introduction, and thank you so much for the invitation. I'm delighted to be online enjoying the coffee with you today. And indeed, the topic of my talk today is going to be about my work in Euclid. There are going to be a lot of disclaimers during this talk. So the first disclaimer is that now, this is not my PhD project. This wasn't supposed to be my PhD project. I started back in 2018. As a Sitter Fellow, I had the freedom to choose whatever I wanted to do. The idea was to continue doing inflationary models, forecasts, and so on. However, the Euclid Consortium trained just pop up, and I took it. And it's been one of the best experiences of my PhD so far. So if there is anyone who is actually interested in joining a little bit, how is the experience of working in a big collaboration or something like that, you will hear me talking about it during the talk. Anyway, so regardless of the background of the audience that is listening to me at the moment, I think every single scientist, even in the world, maybe it's a little bit pretentious to say, have seen at least once in life the typical pie chart that is telling us that our universe is composed by slightly less of 30% of cold matter, that we have almost 70% or something that we call dark energy that is responsible of the accelerator expansion of the universe, and that we really like to model using a cosmological constant lambda. And then the leftovers are basically the corresponding baryonic matter, so the visible matter of our universe. The question is, how do we actually obtain this typical charts that are so visually learning tools to actually understand what is the composition of our universe? So how do we actually convert a theoretical model of the physics of our universe against cosmological data? Well, the answer is that modern cosmology, so basically the last 30 years of cosmology, where we have built all the knowledge about our universe, have used a Bayesian statistical approach to actually answer these kind of questions. I personally wish that we have the resources, the energy, and the time to use a frequentist approach, but the reality is that we cannot repeat a cosmological thought experiment a lot of time. It takes almost 20 years to actually, from the design and moment of thought of a mission until the collection of the data to actually happen. So Bayesian statistics is our tool to answer the questions of hypothesis testing, parameter estimation, like the one that I was showing before, given lambda CDM, how much percentage of the different ingredients of the model we have, and model selection. Why are people so obsessed with lambda CDM? Why are cosmologists so sad sometimes that lambda CDM is strongly favored with respect to the data? Well, because we have done this Bayesian statistical exercise of model selection many times, comparing lambda CDM with extended models of lambda CDM. So, and it is what it is. So let's focus in this part of the question, a little bit of the data. So as I said, our information or the knowledge that we have about our universe in the modern era of cosmology has been based, this is just a chart of the European Space Agency. Of course, there are way more experiments coming from NASA, from the Japan Space Agency, so on and so forth. But what it is true is that the knowledge of our universe has been built at the beginning in the information that we extracted of the cosmic microwave background with WMAP, and finally with our Holy Planck, which is always right. We are entering into an era of a lot of excitement with gravitational waves since the first detection, the possibility of a new window of observation for events open up the possibility of learning way more. But the reality is that right now we are entering into the so-called large-scale structure data phase, where a lot of large-scale structure experiments within the Euclid mission included, are have started or are about to start. And we are aiming to exploit every single information that it is encoded in the large scale structure of our universe in here. So Euclid, which is expected to be launched hopefully by the end of next year, was a mission that it was designed to map the dark universe. This is how it was sold. The idea is to basically this theorness over the nature of or the reason of this accelerated expansion of our universe. So basically a study dark energy. This is the poster that NASA released to celebrate Halloween this week. Well, last Sunday, actually, when you actually see that a very important role is expected from the European Space Agency Euclid mission. Well, the reality is that Euclid is going to be way more powerful for all the scientific questions apart from just dark energy. It will have some impact in that matter. Also in the initial condition distribution of inflationary models or, well, galaxy clustering as of planets. There are people probably in the audience that know way more than I actually do regarding the other secondary probes that Euclid is able to measure. The question is who is gonna be or who is the responsible people of squeezing the scientific information of the Euclid mission? That is the Euclid Consortium. So the Euclid Consortium is this official scientific group of people of order 10 to the 3 scientists that were basically in charge of the production of the data, the exploitation, and of course the final results. So as I said, I joined Euclid. It wasn't planned during my PhD. I joined back at the end of 2018, the Helsinki annual Euclid Consortium meeting of 2019 was the first one that I actually met. Imagine me, a poor naive first year PhD candidate. Well, you don't have to actually imagine me, I was there. But I remember that I was like really shocked because I thought that holding a master of a specialization in cosmology, I was pretty prepared to understand cosmology. And the reality is that I came up with the conclusion that the people around me were not speaking English, but something that I denominated Euclidean. And I wasn't Euclidean yet. I wasn't fluent in that. But I was actually very motivated. I joined basically because there was one working package in the theory science part of the consortium that was interested in inflationary models and initial conditions and all the science that can be done in that aspect with Euclid. But the reality is that once that the people around me knew that I knew how to code and that I have computational skills, I was requested by other working packages, by other groups, and I couldn't say no. I was really, really excited of belonging on something big. And yeah, it's something that I don't regret. Actually, like this is the picture. Maybe you can find yourself if there is anyone within the Euclid Consortium here. I actually had a bad time finding myself in this Mondrian-like picture. But yeah, like 2 years after that first meeting that I joined, I was able to, well, I've been actively involved in the theory science working group and in other work that I'll show you later. But yeah, this is an experience that I will never, ever regret taking during my PhD. It is true that it has been so time consuming, but so rewarding in so many aspects that, well, if there is someone out there thinking how is it to be working in Euclid, of course, it really depends on the different working science, working packages that you join, but there is tons of things to learn and you learn by listening, computing and doing, which is actually great. Anyways, if we compare, how do we actually compare a theoretical model to data? This is a question that I was showing at the beginning. I hope that I convinced you that we are gonna have great data coming from the Euclid mission. So now let's focus a little bit on the model. How are we actually gonna model theoretically these observables that Euclid is gonna measure? Well, there are three equations in this presentation. These are the first two. I think that the number of equations would be inverse proportional to the quality of coffee. My coffee right now is pretty good, so this is why there are only three equations. In any case, these first two equations are for you to understand and to grasp a little bit the information that we are trying to extract with Euclid. Euclid is going to produce one of the biggest galaxy catalogs, and the goal is to measure two primary observables. One referring to the photometric survey. So basically weak lensing and galaxy clustering. So the angular power spectrum of galaxy clustering photos E and weak lensing. And with respect to the spectroscopy survey, the analysis was going to be done in Fourier space in terms of the Legendre multiples. What it is important for you to understand, and please, I know maybe there are some people in here that for sure has been working a lot in wavelengths in galaxy clustering, galaxies in general. This is just a very easy expression of the observables that we have implemented in our software. This is just recipe 0.00. What it is important is to understand that these observables are basically proportional to the matter power spectrum. I'm pretty sure that you have seen the power spectrum of matter perturbations many times, you know, with the peak around 10 to the minus 2 on the baryonic acoustic oscillations. And you see that both observables are also proportional to, in the case of the photometric survey, some window functions, depending if you're studying weak lensing or galaxy clustering photo Z, and some cosmological ingredients, the Hubble parameter and the comoving distance. Similarly, as well for the spectroscopy survey, where you use this proportional to the matter power spectrum, some information of the Fourier space, and some information about the cosmology. Okay, fair enough. These are the primary probes that Euclid is going to observe. So finally, if we analyze again, once more, the question, how do we make the comparison of a theoretical model to data? As I said, the answer is basically statistics. The key of Bayesian statistics is that we are assuming that every parameter of interest of a model has an underlying probability distribution associated to it. And the goal is actually to obtain this probability distribution of the parameter that we usually call posterior distribution. Thanks to the Bayes theorem, we know that these posterior distributions are proportional to some probability distribution that we denominate prior. This prior distribution encodes a priori information that we have around the model. For instance, nothing can go faster than the speed of light, but in the case of Euclid, it will be things associated to the to the specifications of the experiment itself, apart from the prior information of the model. And there is another key piece, which is the likelihood. So the likelihood is basically the probability distribution of the model with some parameters given the data. So it's the one that it is making the relation between the model and its parameters with the data. And this is a key piece in order to be able to obtain the posterior distribution of the parameters of interest, in order to obtain the pie chart that I was showing you at the beginning. So I think that you already have more or less an idea of where I'm trying to go. Who is in charge of doing this likelihood for the Euclid mission within the Euclid consortium? That is the Interscience Working Group Task for Likelihood. The scope of this multidisciplinary group of people is not only to develop the likelihood for Euclid, but we are the responsible of producing the Euclid software that will compute the theoretical predictions. So these two equations that I was showing you before, of course, the most robust version of them, and the sample of cosmological parameters in order to be able to produce this kind of pie charts that I was showing you at the beginning. We are doing this for the spectroscopy survey, so for the galaxy clustering spec, for the photometric survey, so weak lensing and galaxy clustering photo Z, and the cross-correlation between the two. And finally, the cross-correlation between the spectroscopy survey and the photometric survey. As I said, Euclid is gonna be essential for other scientific questions. However, we are not responsible of providing the we are not responsible of providing the software for them, like for instance, for the cross-correlation with the CMB or clusters of galaxies, so on and so forth. In any case, if you're interested, this is not forbidden within the collaboration. If you are curious about it, you can ask me at the end or now, whatever. The thing is that we're going into disclaimer number two of this presentation, which is something that I learned and I had to learn very fast at the beginning when I joined IST Likelihood, which is the difference between writing on a statistical analysis package versus writing collaboratively on a statistical analysis package that it is going to be used by hopefully all the time to the three people that belong into the collaboration. So basically we are going from this kind of question, like defining a new variable as a double, to should I define new variable as a double, or should I actually define this new variable at all? There are a bunch of questions that you have to take into account when you're writing collaboratively some code, which it goes from thinking who is going to be the final user of the software, the functionalities, the scope of the software, which things are essential, which things are not. If we have control about every single ingredient that we need to produce our software, if we have dependencies on people, what are the milestones that we have to fulfill? Do we actually have enough resources to produce the code? Up to which point we need to be ambitious? Are we being not ambitious enough? Who is going to do what? How is the communication? How is the organization within the group? And basically, is there anything out there? As I said, we are entering into the era of large scale structure cosmology. Are there other collaborations doing what we want to do, and how are they doing it? Of course, all of this is a learning process, but they are very important to jump into writing something that it is going to be used for a lot of people than just writing the code for the project that you're working out at the moment to produce a paper. Of course, the key is project management. Again, thinking about me back in 2019 when I joined IST Likelihood for the very first time, since the primordial moments of IST Likelihood, okay, that sounded a little bit too coldly and Bible-like, but I was there since the beginning. I thought that I would be prepared because I have taken like a couple of courses of project management and I'm very organized and so forth. Still, what I'm learning every day goes beyond everything that I learned in project management in the theory of the book. So it's also a very big opportunity to put everything that you've learned in terms of project management of organization into practice in a real case scenario. Still, I mean, I'm not going to lie. We are not computational scientists. We are just physicists, astronomers, that we are trying to do our best. But the reality is that when CLOE version 1 was released for the UPIC consortium members, we ended up being fucking fixing a couple of bugs during the production phase while people were thinking that CLOE was safe to be used. It wasn't that dramatic, but still you wonder, like, with all the hours of work that you have dedicated, how this could actually happen. Anyways, let me tell you a little bit more about IST Likelihood and the working structure that we have. For those who are Euclid members, you have access to the Euclid GitLab platform. We are organizing a particular repo in there. Please, if you have questions at any moment of the talk, please feel free to unmute yourself and ask me the question. The workflow, there are different roles in IST Likelihood, as you can already think of. This is very time consuming, so you really need to be confident about the time that you can dedicate or up to which point you would like to give up your time to IST Likelihood. This is why we have like two fundamental roles. So either you are a consultant or you are a core member. A core member are committed at least to dedicate minimum 30% of time to IST Likelihood. I am a core member who dedicates substantially more than 70% of the time. We are working in producing the code following an agile philosophy, which is getting very in fashion these days, also within the corporate sector, basically where we plan, design, develop, test, and release different pieces of code based on different tasks. At the moment, there are two main separate groups, and each of the group is composed by these roles that you're seeing on the screen. So basically there is a Scrum Master that controls that everything is going as planned and everybody's fulfilling their task. There is a code developer, somebody that reviews the code that has been implemented. And because this is science, we need to have a list of scientific experts that are double checking that everything that we are doing fulfills the requirements of Euclid. As you can already guess, I'm one of the main core developers of CLOE at the moment. I was playing the role of a Scrum Master for a while, but also I feel more comfortable and I really enjoy more being in the action of coding part of the software. The thing is that, as I said, we are not computational scientists, but we cannot do this as we wish, okay? There is some minimal piece of information, educational stuff that we need to learn at the beginning, which is basically, of course, CLOE is being fully coded in Python. You can ask me a little bit more about that if you want later. But we are working with a strong system control. It's a code that is full of unit testing. We'll be using continuous integration and continuous development tools And we are really trying to follow the good practices in coding. So not something that works, but something that you see and you are proud of actually coding. So the code, CLOE. CLOE stands for the cosmology, likelihood, and observables in Euclid. You could wonder why we came up with this name. Well, I still, likelihood is probably a democracy, and after a list of many, 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 many names, this is the one that won. It wasn't my favorite, but I take CLOE as my little baby in any case during these 2 years, so I'm happy to be calling it CLOE. CLOE is split in four different blocks. One takes care of the cosmological ingredients. So if you remember, these first two equations that I was showing at the beginning had a dependency on the matter power spectrum, the Hubble parameter, the comoving distance, the growth factor. And all of these cosmological ingredients are taken by CLOE from already pre-existing codes, Boltzmann solvers, such as Camor class. Then there is a module that deals with the data. We are not responsible of the, thanks God, of the post-processing of the data, going from the raw data to the data, constructing the data vectors. For those who speak Euclidean, that is U level 3 responsibility. For those who doesn't know U level 3 is the respectful group who's gonna be doing this, like dealing with the raw data and preparing and constructing the data vectors. Then what CLOE is about is the theory predictions for the primary observables and the likelihood calculation. So basically the implementation of the equations that I was showing you before and to the calculation of the posterior distributions of the model of interest. We are not doing this alone. We are using the cosmological Bayesian analysis framework tool called COBAYA, which is the one that is responsible of doing the sampling and analysis. Because something that I haven't said when I was showing the equation of the Bayes factor is that in way too many occasions, more than we actually wanted, the posterior distribution cannot be computed analytically. The posterior distributions of the probability distribution associated to the parameters of interest need to be computed numerically and need to be sampled. And this is why we need to use advanced inference techniques to take care of the sample of these posterior distributions. And this is why we're using COBAYA with it. The structure of CLOE. You might think that this diagram that you're seeing here is very straightforward because there are a few blocks, but this, coming back to this, the structure of this code, it wasn't straightforward at all. It was during the phase of this disclaimer 3 of thinking how you should be designing a code. So as I said, we are using COBAYA. For those who doesn't know COBAYA, but maybe are familiar with other inference tools such as COSMOMC, COBAYA is the full Python written new version of COSMOMC. We're interfering with that code. So of course there is one part of the structure of CLOE that needs to deal with that. What it is pure CLOE code written in Python and fully optimized at the moment is the cosmological module. We gather the cosmological quantities and we pre-compute some of the ingredients that we need for the equations of the spectroscopy survey and photometric survey. This cosmology block also deals with nonlinearities. For those who are not very familiar in working with large-scale structure observables, most of the information, the cosmological information, is gonna come into the nonlinear part of the observable. So meaning scales, scales is smaller than 10 to the minus, okay, larger than 10 to the minus 2. We believe that, I mean, with Euclid, we should have like some certainty up to k equal 2. And there is like a bunch of things in there that we would like to extract, a bunch of information. And Einstein nonlinears and a special multidisciplinary group is in charge of doing that. I belong to this group because I'm in charge of basically dealing with all these recipes of nonlinearities and putting them into CLOE for us to be able to do the analysis. So we compute the spectroscopy and the photometric survey observables. So the first two equations that I was showing you before, and then we are in the possession of sampling the posterior distribution by calculating the likelihood. At the moment, the likelihood is just Gaussian. We believe that we can continue working as a Gaussian likelihood for the analysis, the first analysis that we are aiming to do. There is an interstitial staff that is an auxiliary folder that contains a plotter routine and so forth. And of course, the data reader that is in charge of reading the data. This is the structure of Chloe version one, the one that is available for the people of the Euclid consortium at the moment. I'll tell you now how you can actually achieve it. This structure is actually changing in the new development phase of Chloe. As I said, Chloe is in GitLab. I wish that we already could have changed the name of our repo that is likelihood implementation into Chloe. But it's, as we say in Spanish, the palace bureaucracy is slow. So yeah, it's not that straightforward to actually change it, but we are working on that. The thing is that this is the repo. This is actually a snapshot of the status of the repo yesterday, I think, or 2 days ago. What it is important to know is that the source code of Chloe is within this folder called likelihood. And another thing that is very important for you, if you're looking forward to see what you actually do with Chloe, is going to the notebooks folder and play with something that is called the demo notebook. So Chloe comes with a lot of documentation, with the recipes that we have implemented, and as I said, with a Jupyter notebook that you can actually interactively play with it. Please, disclaimer number, I forgot how many disclaimers, number three, number four. It's always very useful to read the documentation before actually digging into a code. I know that it is annoying. I usually wasn't doing that. But now that I'm in the other phase of developing a code, there is a documentation for a reason. So it'd be convenient for you to read that. In any case, the demo notebook, so the Jupyter notebook that that is attached with Chloe, is divided in different cases. You will see how it looks like in real in a minute. It has different cases that I came up with thinking on different users. So somebody that would like just to produce a pie chart with fiducial Euclid data, it can go into the case one of the demo and run and go. And it will have like a fantastic plot with the different percentages of the universe. Then there is case two for somebody that would like to go slightly deeper to understand how all this machinery of Chloe, Cobaya, and external codes and external data is going around. And finally, case 2.1 that requires case two to be run. You can actually do everything. This is the first time, as far as I know, and I've been playing a lot with other cosmological data, that a software of a collaboration will give you access to every single piece of information within the code interactively via Python. Imagine for those who were running with Planck maybe once in life, Plick, okay, Plick is powerful, but it is not very user-friendly. With Chloe, you will be able to actually see everything. Like with this demo notebook, basically, that it looks like that. It has like a lot of documentation. It's markdown code embedded within Python code, fully commented and so on. You will be able to basically plot the background quantities. So the Hubble parameter that it is being used at each step of the Monte Carlo, like the different ingredients, for instance, related the growth factor, growth rate, co-moving distance. Also, do you remember that I was mentioning the window functions before for the photometric survey in the first equation that I showed? This is how they look like for the galaxy clustering photo C and for the shear. I think that this didn't have intrinsic alignment, but yeah, so only for the shear of the weak lensing recipe. You can also plot them at each step of the Monte Carlo because this one is cosmology dependent. The photometric survey is thought to be split in 10 redshift beams, the spectroscopy one in four, as far as I remember. Of course, you can output the observables for all of them at whatever redshift beam you want for each step of the Monte Carlo. Again, this is something that it is actually tedious to do with other data sets, like for instance, the supernova information that is encoded in Cobaya, or as I said, the Planck Plick likelihood. And of course, it will be the possibility to plot the posterior distribution. So this is the preface towards the pie chart where you are seeing the probability distributions of the different parameters. So here are the lambda CDM parameters. Because at the end, what we are aiming to do is just fitting. This is an example of how it looks like for Chloe trying to fit NS. My background is inflation, sorry guys, so this is why I chose NS, the scalar till of the spectral index of the primordial power spectrum. So basically CLOE, what it does is trying to adjust the theoretical predictions of the observables. In this case is the weak lenses or the angular power spectrum weak lenses of photometric survey, and it tries to actually find the minimum chi-square of the likelihood to sample that point of the posterior distribution given different values of NS. So I'm wrapping up. Timeline. So as I said, we started working back in September 2019, I think, right before Helsinki. The first version of CLOE was released to the science working group. So the people doing some scientific duties in the Euclid Consortium in March 2021, so this year, we released the software, the documentation, and the examples. So everything that I showed you before. We are working right now very, very hard. Actually, the release of CLOE version 1 was a success in the sense that a lot of people got interested in what we were doing. So we got like a new people involved in the group, so which means like more hands to actually code. And we are really busy improving CLOE version 1 to be at the point of using CLOE for the SPV3, again, for those who doesn't speak Euclidean, is an exercise of the science validation. So producing some robust forecast of Lambda CDM before the launch next year at the end of 2022. I couldn't finish without basically saying something about the people that I work with. It's actually very, it has been a very nice opportunity for me because, as I said, I'm a Sitter Fellow, so between Leiden Observatory and the Institute of Theoretical Physics. So I was working mostly on my own with maybe 2-3 collaborators, but really, really restricted. We were working in IST likelihood online way before the pandemics. I was already used to working online, having a lot of Zoom chats, and learning how to work with people that you have never met in person under the supervision of the fantastic IST likelihood leaders that we have, so Valeria, Vincenzo, and Reina Sahab, has been a very, very nice experience. Very time consuming. You really need to be prepared for working hard if you really want to learn, but really gratifying what we have achieved so far, having a version of a code that works like back at the beginning in 2019 seemed to like a mountain. So let me leave you with a summary here. So for those who are in Euclid, please give it a chance if you haven't done it so. This is version 1 of CLOE is ready. You can find it in the repo. Version 2 will be coming soon. So stay tuned if you have already been playing with it. It's documented. It's very familiar. We are not computational scientists, but we are scientists doing a pipeline, an improved version of the pipeline that we would like to have in the past when we were doing all this analysis. So a lot of the functionalities that we were always missing are included at the moment. This is the result of a collaborative effort. This is something that not a single person could ever aim to do on their own because it requires like expertise for so many different people. And if what I told you so far found it interesting and you would like to learn more, just let me know because we are always looking for new people because there are like a lot of work to do in the extensions of the recipe, novel implementation, and make the experience way more user-friendly. So I will stop here. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Guadalupe. Is there any comment or question before I do my two comments? I don't see any raised hand. Please unmute. Okay, so a couple of comments on two different topics. So the second one is more related to the your work in general sense. Well, the first comment is about at the very beginning. You precise that we are. Well, all the analysis now is based on a Bayesian, statistical analysis based on a Bayesian approach. And because the frequentist approach is not feasible, because experiments takes 10 to 20 years to be performed, so it's unfeasible to expect several experiments.
I don't fully agree either. It is true that you can actually use some of the frequentist approach in the process.
If we do cosmology, we are obliged to be Bayesian, because even though we have tens of thousands of experiments at the same time and measuring the same stuff, what doesn't change is the observable. The observable in cosmology is always the same. If I have tens of experiments of CMB and measure the temperature fluctuations in one specific direction, the value would be always the same, because the random variable is not changed.
Yeah, well, you're right.
So the reason why we are obliged to have a Bayesian approach instead of a frequentist is that because we cannot repeat the experiments, because even though we repeat the experiments, the observable is always the same. So there's okay. Unless we move to an ergodic hypothesis and saying, well, we observe several patches of the sky. Suppose that the different patches of the sky...
The sky can work as a different luminous observable, yeah.
Okay. So that was my first comment. And my first comment. And the second one is the following. I'm interested in your attitude towards science, and the attitude of young science, young students towards science.
Mm-hmm.
One couple of years after I completed my PhD, Simon White, a name that I suppose every cosmology
knows,
published a very provocative paper entitled "Why Dark Energy is Dangerous for Astronomy or for Astrophysics," that I have printed and put on the doors of my office. And the provocative argument was, I suppose you know this paper, is that because of dark energy, astronomy was moving toward this style of science typical of particle physics, where big collaborations focus on a very important topic, but on a single topic. While the peculiarity of astronomy was, for instance, represented by the use of the Hubble Space Telescope, where several small groups proposed different projects using the same instrument to do to investigate different topics. Now, looking at Euclid or whatever big experiment we have today in cosmology, which is very likely the only way to proceed, my feeling is that it's moving toward, it's not only my feeling, toward a kind of a cosmoengineering. Okay, so don't you miss, as a young student, the wish to do science and not engineering on this specific, very fascinating topic? I mean,
I get your point, which is, okay, I of course wanted to reduce the number of personal experiences within the talk, because at the end it was 20-25 minutes. I think I overwent, I think I was talking for 30 minutes. But in any case, I mean, the main reason why I joined Euclid was because, during my master project, there were a couple of things that we really wanted to do with a very specific model of inflation that I was dedicating a lot of hours, and I knew that it had potential to be tested against the data. But the thing is that it wasn't enough with the public information that it was available and released by the Planck collaboration. And I found it like very frustrating that there are still so many things to do. However, because of the way that these scientific collaborations work at the moment, as you were pointing out, that is more like engineering, and there's not letting a lot of room for more interesting or personal or smaller scientific questions, I really wanted to be in the other side. I wanted to be an insider, to have access to the different machinery and the data to try to see if I could actually use Euclid for my purpose. This is the main reason why I joined Euclid, and this is how it was sold to me to do Euclid and to use Euclid data. This was the plan since the beginning. However, now that I've been in the other position, more in the engineering side, I've just come up with a conclusion that is sometimes impossible to actually not work in this feeling of being more engineering-like in order to produce some of the tools that big collaboration needs. At the end, you need to have bigger questions because you need to organize yourself in such a way that at least you accomplish something. And this is one of the problems that we are having right now in the theory and science working group. There is like thousands and thousands and thousands of modified gravity models that we would like to test. But at the end of the day, the resources are very limited. I don't know, compared to the example that you were doing with Hubble, I don't know up to which point, like, yeah, people can actually, Hubble was just taking pictures and people could do actually things with it. The problem is that right now, even if you release, well, you can release the raw data of Euclid and somebody can actually use it to do if they really want to, what we have done until now, right? Because somebody could actually always sit down and write down a likelihood and a software as what we are doing. The thing is that if you don't do it collaboratively in this way, you won't be able to achieve it, which is one of the reasons why there are so many things left from the plan collaboration. The plan collaboration offer a likelihood for the temperature and polarization and the cross-correlation angular power spectrum. But they were using the bias spectrum data and they haven't released it because it was impossible for them to finish the code in time when the collaboration was over. And it is a pity that all that piece of information is lost. Still, people can't redo the analysis that they were doing. And I agree that this system isn't perfect. But I know that if Planck didn't have like a mission, I mean, the goal of the mission was like, okay, let's build a likelihood in order to obtain this pie chart, it would have never have been done. So yeah, it's hard. I was having like all these, more bright scientific questions when I started the PhD of like, this is what I would like to do and I would like to do this with the data, so on and so forth. But now that I've been working for a long time in the other side, let's say, it's complicated. You sometimes are, you have your hands tight. So yeah.
Well, my experience at the end of the PhD was that after a likelihood analysis of very complicated dark energy models, I end up with the preferred one corresponding to the lambda CDM. So they said, well,
yeah.
Do something else. And the CDM is still favored. I take the opportunity just to, for a very practical question. Is the Chloe or some fake version of this Claude available for people not in the Euclid consortium?
Not at the moment. This is something that is not, unfortunately, it's not us. We really wanted to do something else. LSST is having their code completely opened, but because of the red book of Euclid or whatever policy was signed with the European Space Agency, we cannot do it, which is one of the reasons why we actually did not release it only to the science working group, let's say, or to people directly involved in something with forecast. And we say everybody that has Euclid credentials can download it and play with it and stay in contact with it. But no, unfortunately, we cannot make it public yet. We are actually discussing, again, this is policy and engineering stuff because we have dedicated a lot of work in this code. So yeah, of course a paper has to be out of it, not only for us, the more junior people, but also for everybody who has dedicated some time on it. And that takes time because, well, I guess you're Euclid, right? So you know that the key projects now before the launch are taking place. Another question is if people use Chloe for the key projects, then they need to wait until Chloe is released, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, not a straightforward.
Yeah. Any other comment or question? Well, the spirit of holidays.
Yeah.
As I see some sun shining in Netherlands.
Yeah, surprisingly, yes. Yesterday so was pretty light.
Maybe, maybe we should stop here to let you profit of this.
It's fine. I actually got a work to do, but it's fine.
Well, so thank you again, Guadalupe. Let me advertise next week, same.